How many of you enjoy fried chicken? Get find something. Yeah, but Brother Fiavai, you'll eat anything, so I'm not sure that necessarily is an indication. And fried chicken, pull out the picnic basket, throw out a blanket, man. I enjoy fried chicken. And I understand over time reputations can change, but Colonel Sanders, at least for a time, was known for fried chicken. Here's what's impressive about the actual man, and I don't know very much about him. And in any time I use someone as an example, you can say, well, there was this and this about them. I don't know everything about him, but I do know this. He was motivated even later in life. And he was the one who founded Kentucky Fried Chicken, KFC, which today is known as KFC / Taco Bell, which that, I don't even know how that works. I mean, link up with all these other restaurants. But he started franchising his restaurants when he was 65 years of age. And even then, it was a very long and difficult process. It was filled with a whole lot of adversity. And if memory serves me correctly, what I've read about him, he was in his 70s before he actually found success. And yet what's encouraging about him is he did not buy into this idea that because I've reached a certain age or because I've been at something for a certain amount of time, it means that there's nothing left to do. He recognized this, and I'm thankful for it. And I understand you can take this too far, but he recognized that as long as I have life, there is opportunity and there is need and there are things to be done. Now, I'm not at all saying that Colonel Sanders recognized that that fried chicken would contribute to the virtuous of a nation, the virtue of a nation, but it has made a lot of bellies happy and maybe made some hurt as well. But he recognized that even though I've worked for a long time and even though my age isn't typical of the most successful entrepreneurs, there is still more to be done. This afternoon at 2 o'clock here at the church, between our morning and evening service, we are going to have a memorial service to remember the life of Garrett Acuff. And I'm not going to go into all the details now, but one of the things that will be talked about extensively is up until very recently how active he tried to be in his life. And not even active in a selfish way, but constantly trying to find ways to be invested in his community and to minister to others. And for a man who up into his 80s and then passing away at 95, for a man who lived a long life, he lived just about all of that life trying to find ways to invest it in others. He never checked out. And for those of you who say, well, I don't really know him that well, you'll get to know him better through some of the testimonies that happened this afternoon. But I can tell you this, that there was not a point in his life where he said, I just want to coast. No, he sought to live, then he sought to live, and he recognized the need for more to be done, more needed to be done. And if he had life and ability, then he wanted to contribute to what needed to be done. He wanted to contribute to it getting done. So God comes to Joshua in chapter 13. By this time, he's approximately 100 years old. And God confronts him and reminds him of this reality. Look, you are old. And that's not a criticism. You have been at this a long time. And can we all understand this and not be offended? He had been at it for a long time with great success. I'm not saying it was perfect because there are no perfect leaders. The only perfect leader is Jesus Christ, and everyone that he uses, he doesn't use them because they're perfect. He uses them because of their effort to be committed to him and because of his grace to be able to work, even though they might struggle and even though they're flawed. Joshua was not perfect. That was demonstrated at Ai. That was demonstrated with the vow that he made with the Gibeonites. He wasn't perfect, but Joshua was faithful and he loved the Lord, and Joshua had enjoyed much success. And the nation of Israel had enjoyed much success under his leadership. They had gone from a nation wandering in the desert to now they are the dominant force and power at this point in Canaan land. They are the top dog. They are recognized as the strongest and the greatest military force. Again, not because of them, but because of God's work through them. But they have accomplished much. And yet, Joshua was faced with this reality. It's the reality that every mom is faced with. every week, no matter how much laundry I do, no matter how many messes I clean up, no matter how many sandwiches I make, there's always more to be done. There's another room to clean. Wouldn't it be great if you vacuumed and you knew, I'm going to vacuum for the last time? Not because you go to heaven, but because your kids will never, ever, 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 ever make another mess. Wouldn't that be awesome? Or your husbands will never, ever, ever, ever make another mess. Wouldn't it be wonderful if laundry just suddenly did itself? You threw them in the hamper, and then all of a sudden you whistle while you work, and they threw themselves into the wash, they scrubbed themselves, they climbed out, dried themselves off, folded themselves, put themselves back in your drawer, and then when you looked for them, they were there, and you're like, I love living this way. It doesn't happen. There's more to be done, and God is confronting Joshua with this. I'm not expecting you to remember this, but the whole point of chapter 12, we talked about the value of appreciating and spending time thinking about what God has done in your life, because thinking about the good that God has accomplished can give you hope for what he can do in the future. No, we need to be thankful for what he has done, but then we move into chapter 13, and God wants Joshua to be aware of this reality. While you rejoice over what has been done, you need to be aware of what still needs to be done. This is important. I'm so thankful. I didn't plan this. I had no idea that we're going to be here, but I'm so thankful for the Stonikers being here and so thankful for their faithfulness. And yet, if you talk to them, this is what you'll find. Man, God has done so much in us. God has done so much with us. God has done so much through us. And yet, even this morning, just in a few moments of interaction with him, I can tell he still feels the weight. While he is thankful for what has been done, he feels the weight of what still needs to be done. And he's not living his life, even in the later stages of life, as you have to battle different things that come up with age, as you go through that, you're not living your life reminiscing about the glory days. He's still feeling the weight and the pressure and the need for the work of the gospel to continue. More needs to be done. And so, in verse number 7, God doesn't tell Joshua, get this, find somebody younger. This drives me crazy, but it's hilarious every time it happens. Tell one of my kids, hey, you need to get this room cleaned up. And then they turn, hey, you little kids, get this room cleaned up. I'm like, no, look, I don't care if you enlist or force the help of your younger siblings. I don't care. I just want the room cleaned. But you better be involved in it. Yeah, have you ever seen your children delegate to their younger siblings? Those poor victims, the middle children. Get over yourselves. It's all right. No, God didn't say, hey, Joshua, I'm not saying there never needs to be transition. I'm not saying God doesn't want someone else to come along, because that transition happened in the beginning of the book of Joshua. But his point to Joshua wasn't, you're old, so you need to check out. His point to Joshua was, you may be old. There may be limitations in your life, and maybe age isn't your limitation, but you have some limitations. You may be old, you may have this limitation, but there is still work to be done, and you still have life, and so you need to be busy about the work that I called you to when I raised you up to stand in the place of Moses and to become the leader of the children of Israel. And so you need to take responsibility to see the work of the nation of Israel inheriting this land. You need to see that it is accomplished in all the way that it's supposed to be. So 2 points this morning, and then we'll get to the conclusion. Point number one, there is always room for more progress to be made in your life. There is always room for more progress to be made in your life. No matter how much progress has already been made. Okay, I want to enjoy this a little bit. Please stay with me. Can we just pause? And if you've been saved for any length of time and you've enjoyed the grace and goodness of God, can we just pause for a moment? And though we may say there are things that aren't the way I want them to be, can we just thank God for the good that he's done in our lives for a moment? Can we thank God for what he has done? Can we thank God for how he has helped? Can we just testify for a moment to the grace of God that he has worked in our lives and he has seen sufficient to help us and to encourage us and to bring us along? And I'm not saying everything's perfect in your life, but if you're saved and if you've been paying attention, you can see in your life where God has worked and where God has helped. But just because you've made progress doesn't mean there's no more progress to be made. Just because God has used you doesn't mean there aren't more ways that God wants to use you. Doesn't mean there aren't more ways that God expects to use you. You know, I'm afraid too many Christians take this approach to being used of God. Well, God will use me if I want to be. No, God expects that if he died to save you, that you'll be willing to give your life as a living sacrifice to him so that he can use it. That doesn't mean necessarily that God's going to call you to Canada, although he ought to have permission to do that. No. We don't get enough amens on that. He ought to have your willingness to call you wherever, whenever, however he wants to. Well, that's for the teenagers. No, that's for any child of God. We act as though, no, God will use me if I decide. No, you ought to be willing to give yourself to him for his service and his determination, his usefulness and his purpose, whatever he decides and however he decides. You say, I've already done a lot. Well, Joshua had already done a lot. Jordan, Jericho, Ai, read chapter 12 again and see all of the kings that they conquered. And yet this is what happens. There are some believers that are like former high school athletes. We love living in the glory days of what we did. Man, back in the day. Why do we treat the Christian life like back in the day? As though God doesn't have a plan for this day. And God can't use your life in this day. No matter how much you've done. Number two, no matter how long you've been doing it. Ms. Joe, can I talk about you? Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. Ms. Joe is, I mean this in a good way. I'm going to say this at the memorial service. She's feisty. She is feisty. I've had several conversations with her. I know. But there's two different kinds of feistiness. There's feistiness that's a result of having a bad attitude and just being cantankerous. But then there's some feistiness that's driven by, I want things to be the way that they should be, and I want to be involved, and I want to serve the Lord, and I'm just trying to understand. I'm not at all saying that Miss Joe's perfect, but I've been around this long enough to believe that her feistiness is motivated by the latter. I mean, the whichever one is the good one. Sorry. I lost my grammar direction there for a moment. She loves to be involved. No, she loves to be involved. How old are you, Miss Joe? How young are you? 87 years young. You are not stricken. You're not stricken. Yeah. 87. And yet, you know what she's not done? Let somebody younger do it. No, there might be things where somebody younger needs to do it, but that doesn't mean there's nothing that she can't. There's nothing that she can do, and there's no usefulness. Listen, if you had no usefulness, then God would take you to heaven. If it was time for you to be done here, then God would take you to be with him. But he has you here for a purpose, and that's true of everybody. And sometimes we can be involved, and we can labor, and we can pour ourselves into something, and then after a while, we just say, you know what? I've done this. I'm just checking out. Somebody else needs to handle this. And I'm not saying there never needs to be transitions, but there never needs to be a transition from being involved somewhere in the work of God. No matter how long you've been doing it, no matter what you've accomplished, and no matter how long you've been doing it, there's still room for more progress to be made. Benjamin E. Mays was a Black Baptist minister. He was born in 1894. He died in 1984. And he said this, the tragedy of life is often not in our failure, but rather in our complacency. No, please get this. You're not going to be useful to God because you're perfect. And I could have every one of you stand, and without flinching, I would look you in the eyes, and I would tell you without knowing your stories or the great details of your life, I would say, I know this for certain, you have failed. Somewhere you have, and I'm not talking about a mistake, because we want to excuse every bad decision, well, it was an accident. No, sometimes we have a sin nature, and we do wrong. We make choices we wish we could change, and you have made bad decisions in your life. But that's not the determining factor in whether or not God uses you. So many Christians have missed out because they've let failure control them rather than being forgiven and restored and moving on. He said, it's not, the tragedy of life is not in our failure, but rather in our complacency. not in doing too much, but rather in doing too little, not in living above our ability, but rather in living below our capacities. And this burns in my soul as a father. I yearn so much for my children to get a hold of this truth. I don't want you trying to live up to my expectation. I don't want you trying to live a life of competition where you got to be better than the next girl or better than the next young man. I want you to live your life maximizing what God has given you. I don't want you to live a life just trying to skate by and trying to take the easy road. I want there to be a fire inside of you that understands God has given me much in salvation. God has given me much in a family that loves me. God has given me much in a church family that cares about me and wants to invest in me. And I need to take that, and I need to use it for good in my life. I can tell this just kind of bounces off the wall sometimes. Are you hungry for anything? Is there anything in your heart that burns to see what God can still do with your life? You know what the response often is? It might even be floating around in your minds right now. Well, but. And you're going to tell me about a relationship that you can't control. And you're going to tell me about a sickness that happened. And you're going to tell me about a bad decision that you made. And you're going to tell me about where someone hurt you. And I'm not trying to minimize, and I'm certainly not mocking those things. I understand those are real factors, and I understand that those things have to be dealt with and have to be navigated. But we have chronicled in great detail how Joshua both suffered from his own failures, and he suffered difficulty because of the failures of others, and there were giants, there were obstacles, and that was never a determining factor in whether or not God would use him. Are you hungry for anything? Do you yearn, do you burn to see whether you have 10 years, 5 years, 50 years left? Do you yearn to see God do something with your life? You know what the problem is as Christians? This is what we act like. I've arrived. I got it. There's nothing left to possess. And I do not mean this ugly, but our churches bear the evidence of that attitude. You know why there are so many churches that are so dead and so lifeless and so lacking in influence for Jesus Christ? It's because they're either filled or have people in them that just come to church like they've arrived, and they don't really need to try to love Jesus, and they don't really need to try to love people, and they really don't need to make sacrifices or invest or do anything to minister to anybody else, because guess what? I've done it for a long time, or I've already done a lot. I'm done. And as a result of individuals being done, churches no longer have the ability to influence their communities because people have checked out. So what you're saying when you say you've arrived is this: I've read my Bible enough. I've prayed enough. I've witnessed to enough people. I've given enough to help missionaries. I've loved my neighbor enough. I've forgiven enough. I've invested in my children enough. You may not even have authority over your children, but you can still have influence in their lives. Yet we check out. I get it that I was telling the Royal Heirs class this morning. I understand on the scope of age, and in that class is not exclusively, but primarily 70s and up, and it's where I teach right now. And so I'm 40. And I get it that on the scale of age, that especially when it comes to pastoring, I'm on the younger side of the spectrum. And I'm not gonna be that way for much longer. The sideburns starting to show it just a little bit. Now I get it that I'm not going to be that long, but I understand that I have this youthful zeal and energy. But can I just be honest with you? I don't want to lose that youthful zeal and energy. And if God lets me pastor when I'm 60, I still want to be able to dream about what he can do. And if God lets me be useful to him and I somehow, by a miracle, survive to when I'm 70 and don't fall off a mountain somewhere, I want to be useful to God. I don't want to lose the ability to love people. I don't want to lose the ability to invest in teenagers. I don't want to lose the ability to care about families and to care about marriages and to care about helping addicts be delivered, to care about the lost hearing the gospel, to care about churches being planted. You know what I loved about Pastor Cook? Up until his dying day, he dreamed about what was possible. He never lost his passion and his enthusiasm for what could be. I don't want to go out in a recliner. I'm going to go out, but I want to go out dreaming and striving and believing that God can do great things. And yet so many of us have been filled with complacency. There's still people that need to get saved. There's still broken homes that need restoration. There's still lonely sinners out there that think there's no reason for them to live anymore, and they need someone to give them the hope of Jesus Christ. There's always room for more progress in your life, in your family's life. But then there's a counter truth to it. Not a conflicting truth, but a counter. Opposite, balances it. There's always a need for patience in your life. Someone said this about this passage. The work of subduing is gradual. I'll go quicker on this point. Please stay with me. I've had the privilege to see Mount Rushmore. It's really amazing. And one of the reasons I love Mount Rushmore is because there are noses in the world that are bigger than mine. And it makes me happy. Massive. Mount Rushmore is really impressive. It took 14 years to build. And again, my memory may be off on this a little bit, but the guy who designed it and started it all, he died just before it was completed. You know what's amazing? You know what? I love that. I want my dreams and my belief in what God is able to do to be way bigger than what can be accomplished just in my lifetime. Oh, it is. I want to dream bigger dreams for these young ladies than what can be accomplished just in my life. Because I want them to see God working in their lives when I am in the dust and my soul is with Jesus. No, hear me. Great things don't happen like that. They happen with doing right over and over and over again. So you know what that requires? A word that you all love, patience. We're gonna talk about this tonight. Danielle, would you mind coming and helping me, please? We love the Marcham family. We love all our families. The Marchams are a blessing. They help. You okay?
Yes.
Okay. The Marchams minister in our college and career singles class. Andrew and Marjorie, and Danielle has a lot of brothers. Mary Grace is a help. But she's a young help, so you still have to deal with your brothers a lot. Man, this is what I know about Danielle. Sweet girl. She's a sweet girl. Sweet girl. Ryanna, come up here real fast. Hurry up. Yeah, don't whine. I have authority to do this, so get over your attitude and get up here. And love the Acosta. Stand here by Danielle. Man, she's a blessing. She's a blessing. No, Ryanna's a blessing. Danielle's a blessing. Ryanna's a blessing. You say, why are they a blessing? Because they are. Because they are. No, I don't love them because they're perfect. No. You know, this is what I dream about for them. I dream about it for these two. I dream about it for this crew. I dream about it for you. Yeah, I am talking to you. I dream about it for you. That they are going to see God work in their lives. I want this. I want God to work in their lives in greater ways than I've seen God work in my life. And I'm dreaming about big things for my own life. I just want it to exceed. I want every generation after me to be influenced to know God better and to see God do more. Because you can't put a lid on what greatness God can do. No, but here's the problem. Are you ready? You ready? They're teenagers. And here's what that means. If you're offended by this, I'm sorry. But teenagers are dumb. You say, well, how do you know? Well, because I was one. And some of you are so stricken that you have forgotten what it was like to be a teenager. But I can still remember. They are sinners. And they have bad attitudes. And they say the most ridiculous things. This is what Andrea's favorite thing to say specifically to her teenage children. That is the dumbest thing I've heard ever. But here's the problem with that. She says it like 5 times a day. And I don't know how they just keep upping the ante on it. to our daughter that just came home from her freshman year in college, to Ashlyn, to Jason, Jaden. And now I have five teenagers in my house, and they all hear this on a regular basis. That is the dumbest thing I have ever heard. I don't know how they keep getting dumber. I thought they were supposed to getting more intelligent. Whatever. You know what it can feel like sometimes? That you're not making progress. Do you know what you got to remember? Progress is a process. It's a process. I want you to see this. Max and Carrie, can you come up here real fast? I want you to see it. Don and Jerry, come up here real fast. Run. That's not fast enough. I know I didn't give y'all any warning. Can I ask you a question, Miss Jerry? Have y'all grown since you got saved? Yeah. Have y'all grown since you got saved? They're a blessing. They're a blessing. I can talk. I'm looking back there at Mike and June. They're a blessing. Look at Ryan and Maggie. They're a blessing. I start talking about people if you want me to, because I love you. Man, I'm thankful for you. Look at Robert and Kelly. You're a blessing. I miss your husband, Miss Peggy, but you're still a blessing. You're a blessing. And I love it. I love being a part of this. This is what you got to remember. The process doesn't just apply to these two. It applies here. Have y'all grown? Yeah. Are you where you were? Are you where you need to be? Are you where you need to be? No, I know you're not. Say, did you set him up? Yes. No, it's a process. And you know what it requires? It requires patience. Hey, y'all need to get this. But please get this. Please, please. Number one, I'm not talking about self-love. Our culture has gone off the deep end, paying way too much attention to self. If you pay more attention to Jesus, it would help your self-image. But you got to understand this. Jesus is actually patient with you. He is long-suffering to usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. He wants you to grow in grace, and he is patient. And I understand that sometimes. Have you ever messed up as an adult and just hung your head so low and thought, man, I have so little left to live for? That you're wrong. No, you're wrong if you've thought that. And I'm not saying you need to condone, you need to excuse the wrong, but you need to understand that God is aware that Mount Rushmore wasn't built in a day or a week or a month or a year, and there is something up on this platform far more valuable than any monument that could ever be built. It's a monument to the grace, and it's born out in marriages like Max and Carrie's, in marriages like Don and Jerry's. That grace is born out in the lives of young teenage girls and young teenage men like Rihanna and Danielle. It's born out in the monument of our lives, but it takes time. You know, some of you, your problem is this. You want to check out on the process. Like, I'm just not going to keep going to church. Well, that's where the progress is going to be made. You have a church like this where you're being helped. That's where the progress is going to be made. Staying in the process. Well, the process is hard and uncomfortable. Right. You know why it's hard? Because sometimes chipping away at your heart and your attitude is like chipping away at granite. Takes a little, but he's faithful to do it, not to hurt us, but to build us up. Number two, you don't just need to be patient with yourself. I'm amazed at how much grace we want to give ourselves and how little grace we want to give to each other. Go ahead and park it right there, Pastor. No, I'm looking at the clock. I see it. I'm not rushing past this point. No, I need grace. I have needed grace. I've needed abundant grace because there has been sin in my life, and I've needed my wife to forgive me more times than I can count. I've lost track of how many times I've had to look my wife in the eyes with tears in hers and my own and say, babe, I'm sorry for my attitude. Babe, I'm sorry for the way that I responded there. I love you, but I know that the way I handled that doesn't demonstrate that I love you. I've had to look in the eyes of my children and ask them to forgive me. I've had to ask church members to forgive me. I've needed grace. Well, if I'm in such need of grace, and I thank God that it's there every time I need it. It is there. Brother Brian, it's there every time I need it. I'm not saying there aren't consequences. I'm just saying there's grace. There's grace every time I need it. Then what is my problem with giving other people grace and being patient with them? You know, that makes some of you uncomfortable because you think when a pastor talks about giving grace, you think it means we need to condone sin. This church does not condone sin. And God doesn't save us to leave us the same. He saves us to change us. But man, changing is a process. Salvation is a moment. Y'all are doing great. Just stay up there. Salvation is a moment. You don't get saved over a process of time. You don't get saved by saying a prayer this time and this way and this day and then get baptized and then go through the church curriculum and then the religious leader signed it and now I'm a child of God. No, you get saved fully and completely the moment you put your faith in Jesus Christ. You are all the way saved. But this is a problem in churches like ours. We think once people get saved, they have it all figured out. You know, it's okay that people need to grow. Man, hey, it's okay that people need to grow. Brother Brian, it's okay that people who just got saved are not at the same spiritual place that you are now. It is okay. And he's okay with it being okay. So you know what you need to do? You need to have patience. You know, you want people to have patience with your own Mount Rushmore, but then you want to be condescending and not be patient with other people's Mount Rushmores under construction. Rather than being critical of where people are at in their progression, why don't you contribute to making them, helping them make progress? We need to stop. Y'all can go sit down. Thank you very much for helping. And just so you know, I could call so many other people up. It's great what God is doing. Here's the statement. The Christian life is a process of progressing with patience. Two problems. First problem is this. Some of you are just filled with complacency and like you're content just to ride into the sunset. Hey, you're needed in the work of God. Well, we've already done and we've been, okay, praise the Lord. You have life now. Man, you know why Miss Bev was sitting this morning? Because it's hard for her to stand. You know what she's still doing? Singing. Well, if you would not take so much time to let her sit down, whatever. No, there's still a song to be sung. There's still a person to be loved. There's still another chapter to be read. There's still another prayer to be offered. There's still another missionary to be supported. The Stonikers don't have unlimited time to serve in Canada, but when God sees fit to take them out of that role, there's going to be someone else to support after that. But you know what it requires? It requires for somebody to have a desire for their life to mean something. Guys, man, I hope you'll get this. And I hope your hearts will burn for God to do something with your life and you won't waste your life on entertainment and devices, that you'll burn to want God to do something with you. But if that's going to happen, you got to have patience. And some of you need to get over your grumpy attitude. Don't give up on yourself. Please don't give up on yourself. God hasn't given up on you. You say, you don't know where I'm at, but he does, and his cross is enough. But number two, if God's going to be patient with you, you should probably be patient with others in the process. Let's all bow our heads and close our eyes. The Christian life is a process of progressing with patience. Sometimes it's frustrating. Sometimes it's maddening. Sometimes it drives us crazy. Sometimes we want to give up on ourselves. Maybe sometimes we've kind of checked out and we're not motivated like we need to be. With every head bowed and every eye closed, let me ask you two questions. Number one, do you have a desire to make progress or has complacency set in your life and areas? I wonder, with every head bowed and every eye closed, if the children of God, you know you're saved, you know you've trusted him, but you say there are areas in my life where complacency has set in and I need God's help to stir my heart again. To help my heart, to not be complacent, to see areas where I need to make progress personally, to see areas where I can invest myself to help others. I need God's help to shake off the complacency and desire to make progress. Would you raise your hand and say, that's me? I've lost some of it. Yep, I see them going up all over the place. Hold them up before the Lord. You say, I need God to stir me to want that again. God bless you. You can lower your hands. Now I wonder if there'd be anyone that would say, I want the progress, but I am lacking in much patience. Maybe you've given up on yourself. Let me ask this question in two ways. I wonder how many of God's people would say there are areas where I'm struggling in and I have struggled to not give up on myself. Would you pray for me? I wonder if there'd be anyone that would raise their hands and say, yep, I see them all over. Yep, God bless you. You can put your hands down. Now I wonder if there would be anyone that would raise their hand and say, I struggle in my patience with others and I need God's help. Would you raise your hand? Yep, I see him. I see him. Let's respond to the Lord. If God has spoken to your heart, don't ever stop dreaming about what is possible. But what is possible is not accomplished in a day. It's accomplished in a lifetime. And it's accomplished from one generation to another of following Jesus. The process of making progress with patience. Let's all stand together. If God has spoken to your heart, you respond. Brother Nate, would you please begin to sing?